Hello and welcome. I am Nick Hartman and I'm so excited to welcome you to this very special dropped kickoff podcast. This is going to be one of three little podcasts that we'll put out because we have had the greatest chance, an amazing opportunity to interview three global rugby superstars. We'll just send out the best man for the job, Nathan Williamson, to interview and get this. Brian O'Driscoll, Nolly Waterman, and Brian Habana. This wouldn't have been possible without the support of HSBC and Green and Gold Rugby. Thank you to both for helping sort out this amazing opportunity. And of course, thank you so much to all our guests. This podcast is two of the three very special podcasts. In this podcast, Nathan interviews Nolly Waterman. Nathan, Nolly, take it away.
So welcome back to another special interview. Green and Gold Rugby used to drop kickoff. As you sort of, we'd love to sort of have Nolly Waterman on right now, one of the sort of legends of English rugby, a voice of rugby around the world. Nolly, first and foremost, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. I'm enjoying being in Hong Kong for the Sevens. Probably not so much as I have done in previous years because I'm 5 months pregnant. So it's definitely a different experience, but it's amazing to be back here with not so blurry eyes.
Congratulations, it's wonderful news as well. Like, let's start with Hong Kong and that magic behind it. What sort of makes it so special, and can you sort of tell us what's the sort of standout story you have from Hong Kong, maybe before the sort of this tournament sort of gone on?
You know what, I think when I think back to the early part of my career, and when I think of sevens, I naturally just instantly think of Hong Kong, which is interesting because for so long there wasn't the women's tournaments here or even the series. So yeah, it's like that kind of iconic, probably because we had some real success with England, early 2000s, some amazing players and the stadium, and you know, do you know what I mean? It's just such a cool place. And I think being able to come here, 2012, the girls toured, it was actually an England-Australia final. We did get you on that one, I will say, but it was such an epic game. But I wasn't able to tour because I was injured, so I was back home watching. And my mum was, you know, devastated because this place was always the one that she wanted to come, and she needed an excuse, which was often me playing. And so because I didn't get to play here and be part of it as a player, when I finally got invited back as a Laureus ambassador, and then now working with HSBC, I brought her along as a tourist too. And I think probably my best memories and my best experiences is actually being put out in Hong Kong, Joe Bananas, with my mum, who was nearly 70, and the rugby boys basically telling me, the likes of Jim Hamilton, Shane Williams, Tom Shanklin, Andy Good. Actually, Nolly, you can go home. Your mum's way more fun than them singing to her. But yeah, look, whether you're enjoying the party atmosphere and enjoying a beer or two, or whether you're just here, the atmosphere is epic, the energy, the electricity, and fundamentally some of the outfits that people choose to wear from 9 o'clock in the morning till way, way into the depths of the evening are just impressive more than anything.
It's ridiculous. Is there a sort of, you know, I know it's only sort of, what, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock over there, and now is there a sort of fan favourite so far or one that sticks out in the past?
So we saw Hulk Hogan yesterday, who actually on the big screen ripped off his shirt. Fair play to him. I do love it when there's like a coordination of outfits, whether they spell something between them, whether it's just, you know, lots of minions running around. Yeah, there's quite a lot of scantily dressed, not women, interestingly, actually a lot of men take to the enjoying minimal clothing, which is always good. Of all shapes and sizes as well. They're not necessarily the ones that you'd naturally see on the sevens field.
Absolutely not. Again, as someone is familiar with Avo Man in Sydney, we know that all too well.
He was so good. And in fact, I was wearing a green dress the other day and I was like, all I need to do is cut out the circle and I actually could be Avo woman. Now I've got a pregnancy.
You've got to do it for Sunday then. Absolutely.
I'm wrapping the red polo with honour and respect.
Okay. I mean, with this Hong Kong tournament, it's all a lot about the fun and a lot about sort of excitement off the field, on the field. I mean, from an Australian perspective, it's all about Michael Hooper and that transition. You've done it, gone from 15 to 7s and back. Firstly, what are your sort of thoughts on his opening day performance, and what makes that transition so hard from your experience?
I think probably the fact that I was sat with Brian Habana, Dan Carter, Abi Gesaitis, and we were all completely encapsulated by it and supporting him shows just how cool it is. You know, talking about how much of a legend he is in 15s and then seeing him do it and putting himself out there, I think, you know, I probably had the physical attributes as a player. I was quite steppy, I was quite fit and fast, so naturally I suited both forms of the game. Coming from a back row perspective, he absolutely does in and around the contact area. But, you know, he's talking recently on the documentary about, you know, he'd never made any scrum half passes. And that's something, you know, those things that you're like, oh, my gosh, yeah. Like, I started my career as a nine. Like, I took it for granted that I could just do it, even though I was playing fullback for most of my career. So, yeah, I just think it's brilliant. The fact that he's got 77 on his back, I just think is a real, is brilliant. Probably my highlight of yesterday, seeing him being out on the field, wasn't seeing him get into Seven's lung burn and that kind of look of like, okay, this is
awful. This is real.
Even if it's two minutes in, you're like, was actually the last moment of the game against Fiji. And he got a turnover, got a jackal turnover. And it was like, obviously the most ridiculously perfect technique, over the ball, steals it, clamps on, not moving anywhere. Even the size of the Fijians were never going to get him off of it. It was his smile coming up from with the ball, but more so, every single Australian player on the field ran over and were jumping on him and diving on him. And it was just this pure love of, this is what you can bring to our team. And I think that was really special. And I hope it's something that he really, really remembers and really enjoyed, which I think he did because he had a big grin on his face.
Oh, absolutely. You could see on his face, he was loving it. I mean, an experienced player like that, when you have such a young squad as well, what can having, you know, a person who's, you know, had success at 15s coming straight back into that program, what does that sort of do? I guess the follow-up, when you've sort of made that transition, what do you think? Have you had that sort of similar lung burning moment where you've gone, oh my God, what the hell have I done to myself here?
Most of my career, to be honest, it wasn't the fact that I was new to Sevens. I think Sevens puts you in a whole different place because you can't hide on a Sevens field. So your skill set is absolutely not only tested to its limits because of the size of the field with such few players and the intensity that is coming at you from the opposition, the skill set, but also you're doing it pushing your body at its ultimate. You know, you are running on red. It's like, even I know, like, Brian Habana always talks about the fact that he just hated the warm-ups because they were so hard, let alone the games. And that's the reality. I think what a lot of people don't necessarily give credit to for the Sevens players is, yes, we talk about the athleticism, yes, we talk about the rugby skill sets that they have. They are magical. You know, they are producing ridiculous try-saving moments. But it's the mental fortitude to be able to do that repeatedly over a course of 2 or 3 days. And your ability to come up and perform, to then switch off and then to go up again. So it's a minimum of 2 games a day at most tournaments. And I think so for someone like Michael coming in, his ability to keep that morale going, that leadership, the leadership qualities. You know, he was a player that never gave up. He was somebody that was relentless in his pursuit to win and to perform well for Australia. So I think it will be a new challenge for him, but I know that as younger players, they will be leaning into that, I'm sure, and he will be, you know, approaching it in a different way to maybe them. But I do love the fact that they call him rookie because it's just epic.
It doesn't matter if you've played 140 tests as soon as you come to Sevens. It's the perfect representation of, this is a new game. You're on a new base now.
Exactly. I think it's awesome. And it was, I think he said it was from like a 21-year-old as well.
21-year-old, I think, played the exact same club with him at Manly. You know, someone who looked up through him and he goes, hey, Rook, it's just the perfect kind of level up.
But I think that sums up rugby, doesn't it? I think it sums up the attitude and application. And I take my hat off to Michael. You know, he is a global star in our game. You know, and Antoine Dupont is probably more suited in terms of his position. As I say, I started as a scrum half, also has a similar attributes. I mean, I was obviously nowhere close to the skill set that he has. But for him to do it at the time in his career, where the spotlight was on him last year, but not in necessarily a positive way because of selection and stuff, even though everyone was saying this is bonkers, you know, why is he not out of the World Cup? Actually, to put yourself out there and to say, you know what, I'm going to give it my best, and I'm going to swing the bat at it, and I think that that's a real amazing message to so many people, not just young people, but everybody, in no matter what situation, whether it's sport or whether it's job or whether it's life, like, go and try something, don't be afraid. And the fact that he's sharing that story and being vulnerable with it, I think is a real credit to him as a man. And I know he's been open about his mental health in the past. And I think, again, he is using his platform in the most positive way. And I don't think you can get much more credit than someone that you've played in however many Bledisloe Cups with Dan Carter sitting there and kind of cheering you on. I don't know whether he's cheering on Australia or whether it was actually just a
Michael. We'll take it as a sign of weakness, Ryan. We'll take it.
Shh, don't tell him.
Lips sealed, don't worry. I guess you sort of talk about players, people sort of taking that leap, and just to sort of get away from sevens for just one moment, but at a sort of ex-teammate of yours, Joe Yap, you know, coming down here to Australia, coaching the Wallaroos. First and foremost, your thoughts on the appointment, and what sort of character should we expect as Australian fans that Joe and will bring to this Wallaroos side, which is on the rise and rise?
Well, I'm annoyed you've stolen one of our best, to be perfectly honest. And after the last World Cup in New Zealand, for me, Australia were the team to watch. I think they were really unfortunate in the quarterfinal against England because of the weather. I mean, it was just the most ridiculous downpour. Oh. I don't ever see rain like it. And I think that they could have beaten England? I think probably not at that time, I think, but actually they could have really given it a run in if it was slightly different conditions. But yeah, they were the team that I said 2025 with resource, which we knew was kind of coming on the horizon. When you see NRW, it's one of my favorite Instagram pages to watch, like the shots that come in from the girls, the skill level is just unreal. I'm like, and obviously we know what the Aussie Sevens girls do. And I'm like, please, can you not recruit from any of your other things? Oh, and oh, by the way, you've also got Touch Rugby, which Caslick and Alicia Quirk / you know, Nate Lucas. I think I was very, very fortunate to play quite a few caps with Jo. And actually it was a time when I was playing scrum half. So she was a starting scrum half. She was the captain and I was underneath her. And I would go out and she would pass me. I was an 18, 19, 20 year old. And she would come out and pass with me and was always, you know, probably one of the most skilled players I ever played with in that position, from like, you know, dedication to her craft. You know, she captained us in the 2006 World Cup. And I just think that it was incredibly unfortunate what happened in the situation and what she was building at Worcester and the fact that the club went into administration. However, I think it's probably the best appointment that you could have had. I think globally, she is the one that will turn the game around in Australia, which I know as an English person, you're kind of thinking, oh, do I really want this to be happening? But actually, 100% I do, because I just think that Australia have always got so far with actually really little behind them because of their natural talent, their natural competitiveness. And yeah, like a little bit of support going into different World Cups, but they've never had this type of run-in before with that type of leader at the forefront who not only is incredibly good from a skill set perspective and understanding of the game, and not, but she's also been there and done it. She's an amazing woman and human. Oh, giving myself a thumbs up. I'm giving her a thumbs up. I'm not quite sure. Yeah. And also, it leans a lot into culture. So I'm sure it will be a brilliant experience for her, given the diversity within the Australian side and what it means to be Australian. So I'm sure it will be a challenge, but I think it's something that she will absolutely rise to.
That's wonderful to hear. And she's already impressed, like just coming through with her opening chats. And it's, you know, it's been such a get for Australian rugby so far. Listen, Nolly, I can speak to you for hours. It's been wonderful, but I'm conscious of your time. Last question. You're here with HSBC. You've been wonderful in setting up these chats. How can you just sort of finish off at what sort of what they've done to sort of grow rugby and how special the connection is with the Sevens circuit?
Yeah, look, the HSBC Sevens is something that I love to travel around the world. I feel very privileged to be part of it. I don't have to be doing the hard work on the field. I can enjoy it from the stands in my red polo. I think probably the best bit about it, though, is the legacy work and the work they do away from the main elite side, and really showing up with engaging and inspiring young people. There's probably a couple of programs that I really love, and they're actually based out in Dubai. So the World of Opportunity was something that we set up in 2021 that delivers work experience opportunities for young people from the area to come in, and if they're motivated, passionate, love rugby or love sport, they can see that they might have a dream to be on the field in the middle, but actually they could be pitch side because they'd be a medic or working in the tournament director's office or be a commentator or working in the creative department, the social team. So that real piece of inspiration, I know as a teenager, I didn't have a clue. Even now, I don't have a clue that there's all these jobs exist. And so that motivation piece is amazing. But then also the player pathway program they do there, which engages with a huge number, like thousands of Emirati nationals and bringing them into the game. And in particular, there's over 40% of their program that are young girls. Now, the history, the challenges that they face within from a societal perspective, you know, rugby isn't necessarily a sport that they would think they would do. However, seeing the Emirati national team, you know, having come through the player pathway program, a number of those players, they've now become Asian champions in sevens. And you're just thinking, how, like, this is unreal. Not only are they playing a sport that maybe they would have never dreamt of doing, but they're also putting on their national shirt. And then they're now getting that success as well. And being in Dubai in December and having some of the top level people from within UAE rugby, Emiratis in national dress men, talking about how these women are role models and how they are inspirations and legends of rugby is something that it's amazing. And I think that that's a message, not just with sport, but that's with society as a whole in Dubai and the UAE and across the Emirates. So, yeah, they're just two of, like, the 200,000 young people that have been supported in programs across the globe. But they're kind of two that have definitely grabbed my heart.
Oh, it's so lovely to hear. Once again, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you for coming on the Drop Kickoff and Grand and Gold Rugby.
Awesome. Nice to see you.
And that was Nolly Waterman. What a great chat. I'm sure her and Nathan could speak for hours. We also have two other podcasts with Irish legend Brian O'Driscoll and South African legend Brian Habana. Make sure to listen to those two. And until we see you again, goodbye.